Your good neighbor station. Stand by, Murfreesboro. The WGNS Action Line continues a search for truth.
I know you're out there somewhere. Somewhere, somewhere. I know you're out there somewhere. Somewhere you can hear my voice. I know I'll find you somehow. Somehow, somehow. I know I'll find you somehow.
Well, good morning to you. Welcome into the Action Line from WGNS. It is a frosty type morning today. 26 degrees. Wow. That's nippy out there. Mitchell Mote is with us this morning from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. And was this an official frost this morning, Mitchell?
I think this was our second official frost, yeah. Okay. As the first one being, or at least the first, what I would call a killing frost, was yesterday.
Uh-huh. Well, what does the frost do? I mean, it gets rid of bugs, or what does it do?
Well, what happens on primarily to plants is those plants that are tender, their tissue is not able to withstand the cold. I mean, it freezes, and in the course of freezing, it destroys, rupture cells inside, and so basically the tissue dies, and so that's usually it for that season. A lot of annuals, your warm weather annuals, summer annuals, they die at frost, and of course they would have already made seed in most cases, so that they would be able to repopulate again next year. That's what annuals do; they come back from seed every year. And perennials, for example, Bermuda grass, it's a perennial warm season plant. That frost is going to kick it into dormancy. It'll go and some of it already started turning brown anyway because the day length got shorter. And those plants require a lot of sunlight, and so when that sunlight gets to be lessened, their growth rate slows down. So when their growth rate slows down, you don't have as much chlorophyll in the plant, so it's not as green as it once was. And but anyway, when the frost hits it, that kicks them into dormancy, so they'll go ahead and brown on out now, and it'll remain brown until it's time for them to come out of dormancy next spring. Mm-hmm. As far as the insects go, does it kill a lot of them? Well, it can kill some. Fire ants, for example. Fire ants can't survive below a certain temperature level. I don't remember what it is. It's somewhere roughly, in the freezing to just below freezing range. But they are pretty good weather predictors themselves, and they regulate their temperature by moving up and down in the soil. And so as a rule, when it starts to get cool, they go deeper in the ground, thus they're insulated. What really does us good as far as fire ants are concerned is we'll have a real rapid change. It'll be warm, and then we have a sudden temperature drop. It'll catch them off guard, and you can kill a lot of fire ants like that. That's the natural a natural control of them. But the majority of insects that we're not going to affect their populations a great deal because they have their overwinter mechanisms. Whether that particular bug survives or not, their progeny will. And they have means of overwintering either as an adult in a dormant state or as an egg or in some other form as a larva, whatever the case may be, they'll overwinter. But we're not bothered by them too much now, so that's, good. We don't have as much pollen. We don't have as much, as many insects to deal with.
So the hay fever will be going down.
Well, it should. Yeah, you'd anticipate the hay fever to go down. The ragweed and stuff, that those are annual weeds, so they should have been killed by the frost, too. So
that'll be relief.
Yeah, that'll be a help. Sure will.
Let's go to the phones. 893-1450 is the number, 893-1450. And you're on WGNS with Mitchell Mote. How are you today?
Fine, thank you.
Good.
I would like to ask Mr. Mote about some strawberries. I have some beautiful ever-bearing strawberry plants in my flower beds right now, loaded with green ones. What kind of protection do I need to give them over the winter months?
Well, it wouldn't be a bad thing to just cover them up with some straw, just good, clean straw. You know, wheat straw, oat straw. And when I say clean, I mean, I don't mean it doesn't have dirt on it. It's hard not to have dirt on straw since it comes out of the ground anyway. But, you know, just pretty much pure straw without a lot of other weeds and junk like that in it. But a layer of that will act like an insulator over those, and that's about as good as anything you're going to do, I think. You might put a natural fiber cover over it, you know, like a cotton material or just not a plastic type material. You could put that over it and then layer of straw over that. But on warmer days, you might, if you do use the a fabric cover, you might want to pull it back on warmer days to allow, well, just allow it to breathe, them to get their light and so on a little better. But but a good layer of straw will certainly help a lot.
Okay. Well, could they actually freeze up and not come back next year?
Well, probably they're not. No, if they the strawberries will. As a matter of fact, you know, a fellow planted, 53 rows of strawberries back last month, and they're not going to be protected at all. I mean, they're planted on plastic and they're just exposed, and they're going to be there all winter. No, they'll survive the cold, I think. But if you wanted to try to protect those berries that are there and maybe allow some of those to ripen, then that would be the thing to do, is to cover them. But not, they should survive the cold.
The plants over the winter storage.
Yeah, they should survive the cold. But it okay. Certainly won't hurt anything if you want to go ahead and cover them a little bit. That way, if it were to get, you know, super cold, then you've got your bases covered. But as a rule, strawberries are going to survive the winter.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Yes, ma'am. You're welcome.
Good luck to you, too. 893-1450 is our number. 893-1450. If you have a lawn or garden question, let's go to another line here. You're on WGNS with Mitchell Moat. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Good. How are you both?
Doing fine.
Doing great. Thank you.
You know, I didn't have a question about lime, but you were talking about the insect freezing a few minutes ago.
Yes.
And I just wanted to tell you something that happened I thought was really weird. I worked in a plant. I won't call the name of the plant, but I worked in the lab, and we had to do tests on cheese. And they brought the great big blocks of Monterezza cheese and other different kind of cheese, and I had to do the acid test.
Yeah.
And one day we uncovered a big loaf of cheese, and there was a fly on there, and it was frozen, you know, and I thought it was dead. And this other girl, she said, just let it lay out. She said, it's going to come to life, and it's going to get up and fly away. And I said, no, that's not possible. This fly, you know, we looked at it, and it was frozen, and it was dead. But I took the fly, and we laid it out. And with maybe about an hour or so, that fly got up and just flew around. And I thought that was just so weird. And we did it time and time again. And really, if you could take a frozen fly and let him lay out and unthaw it, he'll just get up and fly away.
That's weird.
Yeah, that is. That's odd.
Y'all
I guess,
have a blessed day.
Thank you, ma'am. Appreciate you. That.
That's interesting.
Well, it is. I wonder if maybe he just hadn't been frozen long enough.
I don't know.
Yeah, that's... It doesn't work that way with people, I don't think.
No.
But I guess
it works with goldfish. I mean, fish, don't they, if they're out in the pond in the winter, you can leave them out there and the water freezes. And then when the winter ends and the water thaws, the fish are swimming around again.
It works in ponds and lakes all the time because fish survive the winter. But I don't think the fish actually freezes, though.
Oh, they don't actually.
I mean, if the body of the fish, if the flesh freezes, I don't know that it's going to. I don't know that it, once it's dead, it's dead. And generally,
right.
When it freezes, when flesh freezes, it will. In most cases, it destroys it. I mean, there are, I guess, exceptions to it, but I don't think if you freeze the fish, you'll thaw it out. What you have now is a thawed dead fish.
Okay.
But again, I could. You know, I'm not a fish expert, so I don't know. That's my theory anyway.
But I'll bet you are an expert on some interesting things happening this Sunday.
Well, this Sunday will mark the opening of the extended season of the farmers market, Rutherford County Farmers Market, at the Lane Agri Park Community Center, beginning this Sunday. It will be open from 1 until 4. Those are the winter hours. They are referred to as the extended season hours. And that will be every Sunday through November and through Sunday, December the 16th.
1 to 4.
1 okay. to 4 p.m., that's right. So folks are, you know, after they eat their Sunday lunch or on their way home from church, they can go out to the market. Or maybe if they want to stop by the market and pick up something to have for Sunday supper, they can mm-hmm. do that as well. And the Sunday market differs from the normal season market, the daytime market, from the standpoint that you know, they try to do some different things there because it's a different season of the year and whatnot. But you know, maybe have musicians and different things like that. I don't know.
Things
that
you can give for Christmas, too.
Well, yeah, you'll see some things like that, I'm sure. You know, you don't ever know what vendors will have, but of course that's going to dictate what's there. But yes, if things hold true to form, if the past is any indication, then yeah, you'll certainly have opportunities to look at and purchase things like that.
Baked goods and honey.
Food items, yeah, prepared food items, honey, local honey, cheeses, maybe even some soaps and whatnot made from indigenous ingredients.
Yeah, that's right. That's really good.
Skincare products.
Is there anything grown right now? I mean, is there still something growing right now?
Sure. You know, your greens, lots of greens, you know, lettuce and those cold crops, cabbage, cabbage still if you had it out, spinach, et cetera. And especially if you had what's called a high tunnel or some kind of protection over to somewhat of a greenhouse where you can protect it, you can grow well up into the winter.
Okay, so yeah, with maybe those even cold crops. Tomatoes, I guess. If you had,
if you had a greenhouse, the thing on tomatoes is getting enough light to generate enough light for them. They're a warm plant, so they need a lot of sunlight. But yes, it could. Yeah, if you had the conditions to grow them, you could certainly have them.
All righty. So that's this Sunday, 1 until 4.
One until 4. It'll be every Sunday, beginning this Sunday through Sunday, the 16th of December.
Okay, I understand you have a brown bag lunch. Or was that already? That was.
We had a brown bag last Thursday, and then the last one of the year. It was a good one. Yeah, it was. As a matter of fact, they gave away $100 door prizes, I think. So if you missed it, dang, too bad. I don't know that they'll do that for the November. Probably just for the October one.
Yeah.
But the November brown bag is actually going to be on November the. What is it? The 29th. November the 29th, pruning woody trees and shrubs, woody ornaments.
And what is it about pruning? Everybody seems to get a kick out of pruning, because they must get a kick out of it, because you're always telling people don't prune too soon.
Well, so what is it about pruning? I think it is that pruning is a management chore, management practice that very often needs to be done, or the plants will benefit from it. But we're not sure what to do. We're not sure how to do it. And that generates a lot of speculation, a lot of questions about mm-hmm. pruning, and therefore, you know, that's something that comes up pretty often. We try to address that. Can you prune too much? Well, yeah, you could, I guess. Most people don't. Probably they err on the side of caution and don't prune enough out. I mean, yeah, if you make one pruning cut and that's just right at ground level, that's probably too much when you just cut the whole plant down.
Whoops.
But, yeah. And now tree topping, now that's not very good at all. That's way excessive. That doesn't benefit the tree one bit. But now pruning does benefit the tree. And I guess topping is just very, very severe pruning. But you're talking – why do you prune anyway? Well – it can be for some different reasons. One, to try to maintain a shape. Okay, well, that's something. If you want to maintain a shape, well, you probably have to prune more than once per year if you're talking, say, about a shrub.
Mm-hmm.
Because if the shape that you want it to grow in is not a natural shape, you know, nature doesn't have many things that are just perfectly round or perfectly square or triangular shape, that sort of thing. So if you maintain a particular shrub in that shape, I mean, the shrub's going to grow a lot, you know, if everything's right. If it's a good, healthy shrub, it's going to grow significantly throughout the growing season. Well, pruning it one time to maintain that shape is not going to keep it that way, so you probably have to prune it multiple times, you know, in order to keep it in that shape, to avoid having to cut lots and lots of wood off at one time, and lots and lots of foliage off at one time. Now, another reason you might prune is to try to maintain a size. Well, and that's good up to a point, I guess. But if you planted a plant that is way too big, potentially for the space it's in, then you got to be pruning an awful lot to do that. I don't think it's a good idea to put, say, a sycamore tree, you know, right up against a house, because a sycamore tree can get very, very large, and you're not going to like it. And at some point, you're going to think, well, I need to cut this. I need to remove that sycamore tree, and now it's a big old tree, or it's bigger than it was, and it just gets to be a real headache. So putting the plant, the right plant in the right space, or in a space that's the correct size for it, will help you avoid some of those headaches associated with having to prune it on such a regular basis. So you can prune for size, you can prune for shape. Now you can also prune to maintain blooms, okay, or to encourage blooming. Some woody plants, they bloom on wood that's produced that season. Well, so those plants, to encourage more growth for that season, more new growth, then you prune them at the very beginning of the growing season, so that new growth is encouraged, and therefore you should have more shoots or more stems where you could potentially have more blooms produced. If you don't prune it, the plant's probably going to live just fine. It just may not have as many blooms as it would have had otherwise, because it did not produce as much new wood as it would have had you pruned it. And the reverse is true as far as timing goes. On a plant that blooms on the old wood, say a spring flowering shrub, forsythia is a prime example of that. They bloom on wood that's produced during the previous growing season. So the spring 2012 blooms were on wood that was grown during 2011. If you want to encourage wood, to new wood to be produced the following year, as soon as the blooms fade on those shrubs, that growing season, that's when you go in and do your pruning on it, so that it will encourage, you know, new wood growth throughout the rest of that season for it to bloom on the following spring. So that's primarily why you're, and of course, so you prune for shape, you prune for size, you prune for, you know, bloom or color. You can also prune for health. If you have dead limbs and so on, that kind of thing, you prune them out. It's always good. It's always the right time to take out dead wood. If you've got dead wood, you prune it out. For disease control, if you've got cankers, a canker disease that affects the tree or the shrub, if you've got a canker there, it's always a fine thing to cut that out to minimize and reduce spread. And then from a safety standpoint, if you've got something that's blocking your view on the street or driveway or whatever, then it's always good to cut that out.
Good morning. You're on WGNS with Mitchell Moat.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mitchell, I have a question for you. My son recently bought a farm with about an acre and a half lake on it.
Yes.
And it's been a lot of cattle in there. Of course, no cattle now because the guy was renting and moved them off.
Uh-huh.
But this green stuff comes to the top. It doesn't connect itself back to the bottom, and the wind will blow it down to one end.
Mm-hmm.
Would that be some form of a moss, or was that just manure from those cattle over the years that's been in that pond?
Well, manure probably has aided it, but it is it's probably a growth. It's plant growth. And
it blows to one end.
Yeah, there are a number of those right now. I know in the last couple of days I've seen some pond samples of water that had a combination of duckweed and another one called watermeal. They're just a nice little pale green kind of a plant. Watermeal is a very, very tiny, tiny little, it feels like grains of sand when you rub it between your fingers, and the duckweed is a little bit larger than that.
Yeah, this is kind of like sand. What do you do to get rid of that?
Well, boy, that's watermeal. That's a booger to handle because it's so difficult to give long-term control. Getting the cows, that's a good thing because, you know, when they defecate in the water, then you got all that organic matter in there, and that's just, you know, a good environment to encourage some growth and stuff like that. But there are aquatic herbicides that are designed to control weeds in ponds and so on. And there are a couple of different products. There's one that's called Reward. It's a diquat type product. It's a contact material. It's basically a desiccant. Folks have had some success using that on watermeal, duckweed kind of plants, but it requires one application usually will not take care of it.
How much you have put in, about an acre and a half?
Well, it depends on pond depth and so on. And we could sit down, and if we had a little time and you and I could talk, we could calculate, but we got to come up with your acre feet of water to do that. And I'm not really prepared to do that right here on the radio.
Let me ask you a question. Sure. Later on, will your office come out and look at that pond if he wanted you to?
Yes, sir. We could probably arrange to do that. Yeah.
Would it be any expense to him?
No. No, okay. Sir, it wouldn't be any expense to him.
Thank you a lot.
But the other thing, though, is there's a product that does a better job for long-term control. It's a fluoridone product, or a it uses active ingredient fluoridone called Sonar.
Yeah, spray it all through the lake?
Yeah, you want to spray it. To get best control, now, if it's all blown up at one end for a contact material, then you spray it where it is. But
you just spray it where it is, actually, when the wind blows it to one end.
Yeah. But now, if you want to give longer control, then you want to treat the entire lake, and that's using a product like Sonar or Avast. And that gets into some money, I think. Those are pretty pricey materials. But anyway, that's kind of
an issue. It floats to the top and looks like sand, like you say.
Yeah, it sounds like water meal. And by the way, just for a point of trivia, water meal is the smallest seed-producing plant in the world. It will produce a seed, but it's no larger than
tie itself back to the bottom.
No, it floats. It floats on the top, and it's no larger than a grain of sand itself, but it does produce a seed.
Okay, thank you a lot.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling. And it's the smallest, what did you say?
Seed-producing plant in the world.
So if you wanted a conversation starter at lunch today, you could ask that.
You could. I don't know if it'd generate much conversation.
Well, you never know.
Well, you don't. You don't, unless you try.
I tell you, you've generated some more conversation. 893-1450, Mitchell Motes with us. If you have a question, 893-1450. We're going to pause and check on the traffic and weather. We'll be back. 893-1450. If you have something to buy, sell, or trade, call me. Weekday mornings at 7:50 for Swap and Shop.
WGNS, AM, FM, and online.
Drive Motor Trend's Truck of the Year, the 2012 Ford F-150. Ford of Murfreesboro currently has the Ford F-150 regular cab available for 0% APR for 60 months. That's the Ford F-150, America's truck. Stop by Ford of Murfreesboro today on Broad Street at Northfield Boulevard, online at fordofmurfreesboro.com.
Hi, this is David Lee, General Manager at Ford of Murfreesboro, and I invite you to come down and see our full selection of Fords, and we'll give you the best deal in town.
For over 130 years, dreams have come true at Bell Jewelers. Come by and let Lisa, Greg, or anyone at Bell Jewelers show you the Bellatoire Fun Fashion Color Line. You get a free Bellatoire necklace with a purchase of $300 or more now through the end of the year. That's at Bell Jewelers. They really do make dreams come true. 821 Northwest Broad, across from Toots. Bell Jewelers.
Roberts Discount Auto Repair on Broad, across from Ford of Murfreesboro. Tune-ups, oil changes, auto repair. 896-1407. Roberts Discount Auto Repair on Broad, across from Ford of Murfreesboro. We care, and we're here to help.
Good morning once again. We've got a little bit of congestion. I-65 coming into downtown around the Old Hickory Boulevard exit and Hickory Hollow Parkway area. So anticipate that from an earlier accident. Also, we've got a little bit of congestion. Old Fort Parkway at Chapin Place. Old Fort Parkway at Kaysen Lane. I-24 at 96. National Flight Training offers affordable flight instruction from FAA-certified instructors who work on your schedule at your pace within your budget. Call National Flight Training at 366-9192 or go online to nationalflighttraining.com. We're Randy O'Brien with traffic on WGNS.
Thank you, Randy. What about that Murfreesboro weather? Brought to you by First National Bank of Murfreesboro.
For the forecast area today, we'll have plenty of sunshine with a high of 60, light northwest winds around 5. Cloud cover tonight, low of 42. I'm WGNS meteorologist Mandy Valuber.
Right now, 30.
This is Frieda Morgan at First National Bank of Murfreesboro. We offer checking that comes with a free check card, free mobile and internet banking, as well as free bill payer service. First National Bank of Murfreesboro, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
We're WGNS, FM 100.5, FM 101.9, and AM 1450. Worldwide at WGNSradio.com.
Welcome back. Cold morning, 28 degrees on the historic square. Brr. Mitchell Motes with us from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service, 893-1450. If you'd like to lock in with a question, 893-1450. Good morning. You're on WGNS with Mitchell Motes. How are you today?
Good morning. I can hardly hear you.
Okay. I'll use my outside voice. How can we help you?
Okay. We live right here in the middle of town, and we have a groundhog under a building that is living there, and we love to watch it. But I wondered how ordinary that is for them to be right here in town.
Pretty common. It's pretty common. Yes, ma'am, it is.
Okay.
And boy, you sure got a good attitude about it. Because that's the best attitude to take. If he's not hurting anything, I wouldn't worry about him too much.
Oh, I'm not worried.
But that's generally the question is, okay, so I've got this groundhog under my garden shed or my outdoor storage building. I'm in town, so what can I do to get rid of it? But no, ma'am, it is not that uncommon.
Well, we just figure we have a new pet.
Well, that's not a bad way to look at it. They
have really good eyes.
They do. They have good eyesight. They eat. They're vegetarians,
yes.
So you don't worry about them bothering your pets, I don't think. Now, I guess if they start eating your flowers, you may take a different attitude about the groundhog. But
yeah.
It's pretty common to see them.
Well, I was wondering, when it snows, what will they do for food? And during this time of year, do I need to put out some water somewhere, or do they manage to get it?
They forage out a ways, and usually when they choose a place to den up like that, they're kind of like other animals. They're going to try to select a place that provides for them, that has within the vicinity of it. They don't stay in that hole. They come out and they forage and they go out and so on. And so if they have chosen a particular location, then it must be because their thought process, assuming they think at all, but their instinct tells them that what they need is in that vicinity. So I wouldn't, I think it'll survive just fine without it. And generally now what they're going to do is they're like, say, bears, for example. They get fat in the fall of the year. They fatten up. They consume a lot of calories. They consume a lot of calories so that when the cold weather does set in, and if you do get a big snow cover on the ground and they can't get out, then they live off their fat, basically.
Oh, is that what they do?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, well, I appreciate all this information because it lets me know we can enjoy him without even having to worry about him.
Yes, ma'am. I don't.
Now, early on February 1st, early morning, February 1st. Would you call us here at the radio station? Let us know if he sees his shadow.
February 1st. I have to put that on my calendar, Bart.
Right. Plug that in.
That gives us a local connection there.
Okay, but the last few days he's been getting out and foraging in the backyard and eating the grass. We threw out some carrots, thinking the rabbits and squirrels would eat them.
Yes.
And he's having a ball with those, and he's just cute as he can be.
You don't have to worry about feeding him.
Okay.
And I kind of maybe would encourage you to not feed him. Simply because... I don't know that you want a big population of groundhogs.
No.
They'll all come moving in.
I had an interesting call a few years ago from an individual, and they, just like you, live just kind of here in the center of town. And they had noticed a hawk. And they thought, well, that hawk is a pretty thing. So I wonder if we can encourage the hawk to stay in the area. So they did some things to encourage the hawk to stay in the area. They would feed it. They would put out, the hawk is a meat eater, so they'd put out meat for it and so on. Well, those hawks started staying in the area. Well, then a pet started disappearing. So then the question was, well, how can I get rid of the hawk?
Uh-oh.
Well, you got a little different ball game there. It's being a protected animal. There's not a whole lot you can do for it. I mean, not that you personally can do for it. So I'd always encourage folks to not try to encourage do things to really encourage those animals to stay, because then when it gets to be a problem, or if it does become a problem, then you're faced with what to do about it. And usually it's not as easy to get one to leave as it is to get one to stay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate the good information. Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. Well, enjoy them while you can.
Okay. That's interesting about the hawk. My mother-in-law had a bird feeder for regular birds mm-hmm. out in the backyard on a shepherd's hook.
Okay.
And I was watching that bird feeder one day, and I'd never seen anything like this. A hawk came and sat on the bird feeder. Of course, right. I don't know whether he was looking for that bird feed or maybe the birds that feed on it.
I suspect it may be that it provided a good perch and a vantage point there.
But when he left, that shepherd's hook was really going back and forth.
Oh,
I mean, he was
a good size bird.
Yeah, good size.
It's
there.
A big bird.
Good morning. You're on WGNS with Mitchell Moat. How are you today?
I'm doing pretty good, Bart. I was calling in. A fellow was called in earlier about he was having a moss problems on his pond. I've had a similar problem on my pond a year or so ago, and I went down to the co-op when the fish truck was down there and got me three or four grass carp, and they cleaned that problem up in about less than a year. So if he didn't want to use any spray or anything, he can go down there to the co-op when the fish truck's down there and get him some there's certain type of grass carps he can get, and they'll clean that problem for him up right quick.
Okay, have they stayed alive and continue to clean your pond?
Oh, yeah, they're keeping it pretty clean, and they've grown quite a bit. So they were about 3 inches when we got them, and they're probably about a foot and a half, 2 foot long now. So they've cleaned up the pond pretty good, and they keep that moss in check. So appreciate y'all show. Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
You bet. Thanks for calling. He brought up a good point. The grass carp can be used to control vegetation in ponds. Thing about the water meal is that the young carp will eat it, but as they get older, they stop eating it. So you've mm-hmm. got to, if you've got a pretty severe water meal problem, then you have to continually introduce younger fish in there to maintain that population of younger fish to consume it. I don't know what it is about the fish that makes it stop eating it or cause it to stop eating once it reaches a certain age, but for some reason they do. And it will work, though. It will work. That is a way to do it without the use of any pesticide.
Okay. Now, earlier one of the calls was about pruning, and I wanted to get you going in the direction. We ran out of time on that one. Get you going in the direction of we're approaching when we don't have leaves on the trees. Pretty soon they'll all be off.
Yeah, all of our deceduous trees will be
And that's a really good time to prune the trees because you can see
You can see limb structure. Mm-hmm. If you ever stood outside and the wind's blowing, and of course the last couple of days haven't been hard to find times when the wind was blowing with the remnants of the hurricane. But you just hear a tree, when it moves, you hear squeaks and groans and so on.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of times that's caused, the majority of the time it's caused by limbs rubbing against one another. And if you look closely where those limbs are rubbing, then, it's making a raw place. It's rubbed through the bark. I liken it to your skin. It's made a sore. Mm-hmm. It made an opening. Well, it's good to remove limbs that rub. If you got two rubbing, take one of them out. Which one do you take out? Well, you take out the one that is least desirable to you. Maybe you've got one that's growing to the interior of the plant. You want limbs that are growing out, so you take those interior limbs out. You got one that's wanting to grow down instead of up. Well, you take that one out. But it's easier to see that with the leaves off. And you can have... you can just better see what's there, what needs to be taken out. And it's just a simpler job for you. And limbs without leaves on them are not as heavy as the limbs the leaves on. It's time to deal with the brush when you're piling it and dragging it around and so on.
And with fruit trees, aren't you supposed to have open canopies in the center, sort of?
Especially peach trees. They need an open center.
It's hard
kind of
to see that
shape.
With leaves.
It's the more difficult, yeah. So you prune those kind of early in the late wintertime, early springtime.
Good morning. You're on WGNS with Mitchell Moat. How are you today?
Good morning, Bart.
Good morning.
This is Tom Hogshead. Out walking in this cold weather, listening to the radio as I walk, and I had a question about my Bradford trees.
Okay.
I cut those things back about at least every other year, sometimes every year, all the way up to the top, put a ladder up there, and I keep the limbs trimmed off real low because those things can get crazy with you. So my question is, if I understood right, Mitch said don't trim your trees.
No, I didn't say that. I said you don't top your trees.
Well, that's what I do. I top them because they grow up high, and I go in there and cut all the top out of them and bring them back down to a decent height. But they seem to be doing real well. They come up in spring, and they don't get crazy as far as the size.
Well, when I'm talking about topping, I'm talking about when you've got you it's not hard to find examples of it. You drive down, just drive around, you'll see trees have been topped, and when they're finished, they look like great big hat racks. And you know, you don't have any small limbs left out there at all. You just got just great big limbs that are cut back just to stubs, and it kind of reminds you of a hat rack. You know, you've got four or five big limbs out there you hang a hat on. Now, those things are going to grow back out. Yeah. Assuming the tree is vibrant at all, it's going to put out a lot of vigorous growth. Well, that's basically that new growth that comes out is very much like a water sprout. It's like a sucker. That growth is going to be weak. It'll grow faster than other growth would have, than normal growth would be. And so you just set up this cycle where you're continually having to do that. And you've got those big wounds in there. You just set up an environment where you've got a lot better place for disease organisms to enter into the tree to cause infections in it. Just basically, topping is going to shorten the life of most trees. And if you plant, you know, the tree that's of appropriate size in the appropriate place, there's not much need to do that unless a tree doesn't need to be topped in order to live and survive. Trees in the forest survive just fine without it. They don't necessarily need to be pruned, assuming they're planted in a place where they've got room to grow. It's just when we plant them in places that they're going to exceed the space allowable to them. You plant them under power lines, they're going to grow up into that, or too close to structures, or when they obstruct highway visibility, that sort of thing. That's when we have to come in and do pruning to keep them out of the way.
Well, if I kill them, I'm really not going to be too upset. Those things are kind of crazy anyway.
One thing about it, keep in mind, they will die. I guarantee it, at some point they will die. There's never been one yet to live forever. Now, the trees can live a long time, some a lot more than others, but they eventually will die.
All right, well, I got a pear tree and I got a peach tree in my backyard.
Yeah.
And you say that you probably ought to trim those some.
Yeah, late winter time, early spring time is a good time to think about cutting those back. Peach tree, you like an open canopy, kind of like a vase. If you can visualize that, it spreads out wide at the top, more narrow at the bottom. And on the pear tree, you prune it kind of like you would an apple tree. You've got kind of a central leader you just kind of thin the limbs out and so on. So it's, when it does produce fruit, pear trees, boy, this last year especially, just conventional pears, you often had limbs breaking down. They had so much fruit on them. It's good to go ahead and thin those out during that dormant time every once in a while to help minimize that to an extent.
Yeah, I've got one limb on the peach tree that I can't mow around, and it's kind of low. It wouldn't hurt to cut that low limb off.
It wouldn't hurt at all. No, sir, it wouldn't hurt.
Yeah. Good. All right, well, I guess that covers.
All right, well, appreciate you calling.
Yeah, right. Enjoy listening to you.
Enjoy your walk, Tom.
Oh, yeah, I've already got it over for the day, Bart.
Oh, okay. It's 30 degrees outside. You picked a good morning to walk there.
I did.
I was probably 27 when he was out, so, yeah.
You take care of yourself.
Oh, yeah, nice talk to you guys.
Good to talk with you.
Bye.
And let's take another call here. You're on WGNS with Mitchell Moat. How are you today?
I'm doing great, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Question for you. It's a lawn question. I seeded my yard about the end of September, first October,
mm-hmm.
and there's areas with the fescue seeds. There's areas that's coming in beautiful,
uh-huh.
But of course there's areas, pretty big areas, that it hasn't taken at all. Is there something I can do to, I guess you could say, through this winter to prepare my yard for when I get ready to do it again in the beginning of, I guess, March time frame, because I just retired from the military and I'm trying to do something to stay out of my wife's hair.
Okay. Well, you know, if you've got a lot of bare places out there still, I don't know that I'd wait till spring to do it. I might think about putting out a little more fescue seed in those areas now. Because if you don't do something, if you don't grow something there, if you don't grow something that you desire there, then weeds will grow into it. I can just
and
almost promise you.
And that's what I noticed
that.
Right now.
Yeah, those weeds are growing in there. And probably what you're having is winter annual weeds like chickweed, henbit, things like that. They're very prolific, and there's usually a large bank of those seed in the ground. And when you have vacant or bare spaces at this time of the year, they're going to grow in. And you could go in and just kind of lightly cultivate those areas through the use of you know, a good stiff rake, a dethatching rake, or you could use a tiller where you're not tilling very deeply. Use a dethatcher where it's set to slice into just the upper surface of the ground to cultivate a little bit. Yeah. Sow some more grass seed out there, and on those truly bare areas, then maybe coat them with a light layer of straw. And see if you don't get some luck at it. I suspect that you'll still have some germination. Now, it is later in the year than we would recommend that you be sowing seed, but if you've got those bare places, something will grow, and I'd rather take a chance on some of the grass surviving versus just letting those weeds grow up and become more mature as the winter goes by. If you wanted to, you could use a contact type herbicide, something like a Diquat, that would all it's going to do is it just desiccates the tissue, just burns the tissue, and you can just you can spray it on a good sunny morning, and usually by that afternoon it'll be browned out. You can come right in behind it and plant. You don't have to wait any period of time. But you could also just cultivate those up too, just through your scratching around process. You'll pull a lot of them up out of the ground by doing that.
Okay, because I definitely need to do something. My neighbor is starting to think my side of the yard is his, so I got I'm trying to get it back right.
Well, I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
So thank you very much.
Well,
I
good
really
luck to you.
It.
Yes,
hope
sir.
You gentlemen, have a great day.
Thanks
thank
a
you.
Lot.
And thank you for your service to our country, too.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Thank you.
You have a great day. Bye-bye.
Well, one thing coming up, Bart, the winter time, early mm-hmm. spring, we have a lot of classes offered, a lot of training sessions, educational sessions that we put on there at the Extension office. And folks can go to our website, just Google Rutherford County Extension, and you can find a calendar of events. And they're not all up there yet, I'm sure, but several are. And one thing that's coming up, matter of fact, they're beginning to take registration for it right now, is the Garden Basics class. It's taught by mm-hmm. the Master Gardener Association. And that's begins in January. I think it's a four session program,
mm-hmm.
like a couple of hours four Saturdays. It's in January. Starts in January. The folks can register for that now. They can go online and get an application, or they can contact the Extension office at 898-7710, and they can email them one or mail them an application if need be. I think it's a $45 cost. But also coming up in March is program that I do each year. It's called Lawn Care 101,
mm-hmm.
and it's about 7-8 hours worth of training. We'll do it all on a Saturday. It's early in March, I think it is. I think I've got the schedule right here. On March the 9th, Saturday, March the 9th. And we'll cover, just all the basic things pertaining to lawn care for homeowners or anyone else that's maintaining, their own residential lawn area, from the types of grasses to the growth requirements and the management practices, establishment, renovation, weed control, using equipment, and so on, a lot of things like that. So the gentleman just called us retired. That'd be a good opportunity for him to take advantage of that.
Mitchell Moat is with us this morning from the Rutherford County Agricultural Extension Service. We'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, this is Tina Fox at the Rutherford Farmers Co-op Farm and Home Center. Don't forget, this is the perfect time of year to help those lawns. We have all the grass seed and lawn care that you would need. We also have a new clothing line in. We have some of the Under Armour clothing. It's also the great time of year for you to start thinking about those Christmas gifts, so come visit us at our gift department. And also, don't forget your little feathered and furry friends. We have a great bird and pet department. Co-op Farm and Home Center on Middle Tennessee Boulevard, just off of South Church.
Does your home have foundation problems? Bricks cracking, doors sticking, basement walls bowing, floors uneven, or water problems? Where do you turn? What name do you know and trust? Call United Structural Systems at 227-2275. For over 17 years, United Structural Systems has stabilized, restored, and guaranteed over 5,800 homes and businesses in Middle Tennessee. We know that you, like our customers, want a restored home, a lifetime guarantee, and the peace of mind that United Structural Systems, a locally owned company, will be here for you. Call United Structural Systems today at 227-2275 or visit them on the web at USSTN.com. United Structural Systems, known best for being better.
We'll guarantee our best. Call USS.
For the forecast area, today we'll have plenty of sunshine with a high of 60, light northwest winds around 5. Cloud cover tonight, low of 42. I'm WGNS meteorologist Mandy Faluber.
Right now, 30.
Now's the time to spruce up your home before friends start arriving for the holidays. The place to start is Bell Furniture. My buddy, Perry Bell, over there sells first-quality name-brand furniture about half price every day. Beautiful Serta sectional sofas. Cherry dinette sets with four chairs. Half price every day with Perry Bell at Bell Furniture. 1517 the New Nashville Highway, halfway between Murfreesboro and Smyrna.
Middle Tennessee football and basketball games are right here. This is Chip Walters on Rutherford County's Blue Raider Station.
MTSU Sports on WGNS.
Mitchell, I was getting ready to take, we have two more people who have questions on the lines, and I looked up at the clock, and we're out of time.
I think the clock's fast.
I think it is, too. We've been having a good time this morning.
We certainly have.
Just lots of fun going on. Don't forget the special winter
season, the extended season of the farmers market begins this Sunday. It'll be every Sunday from this Sunday through the 16th of December from 1 until 4 p.m. at the farmers market that's held in the community center at Land Agri Park. And if you're not sure where that is at 315 John R. Rice Boulevard. You pull in the entrance, there's two entrances there to the Land Agri Park office complex, and you drive all the way to the very back of the property. It's not that far, just follow the streets back there, and it's the last building back there, and there's a big sign out, a big banner that says Farmers Market. That's the place.
1 until 4 this Sunday. Mitchell Moat visiting with us today. Stay with us, much more to come.